Welcome to Under Construction with Chadwicks. I'm Donico Callahan and I'm delighted to be joining Pat Moore yet again. Pat, how are you getting on?
I'll go, Donico, yourself.
Did you miss me?
A week away.
Loads.
We've nicely worked up this bit of a love-hate relationship. I love hanging around with you and you could think of nothing worse, Pat.
The only problem I told you is I look like a bit pasty when I'm sitting beside you, so I'm contemplating the tan piece.
Listen, we have a break after this, we'll go for a sprayer.
It's probably different to the ones you're used to, but it'll be all right. Be a quick lash of Ronfield will do you.
Yeah, that's it, Ronfield. Yeah.
Today we are chatting all things community and some of the brilliant initiatives within our community. And we're delighted to be joined by Maeve Murphy, the operations manager in Benchspace. Maeve, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Maeve, could you tell us a little bit about Benchspace?
Sure. Benchspace is a social enterprise, non-profit based down in Cork City. It is a creative oasis, really. So we provide industry-grade tools, technology and space for people who want to start creative businesses.
Wow, brilliant. We're also delighted to be joined by Enda Egan, CEO of The Menshend. Enda, how are you?
Good morning, Donica. Good, yeah.
Brilliant. I'm quite aware of The Mensheds, but to some of our listeners not so aware. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so I suppose The Mensheds is it's an organisation that originated out in Australia. It's in Ireland for about 10 years. We've about 420 odd men sheds. It was actually the highest number of men sheds per head of capita in the world. So we have sheds pretty much everywhere. At this stage, there's probably a shed in every parish, I'd say, in the country. And a shed is basically a sort of a social space where men come together to do things. That could be, you know, making furniture, it could be fishing, it could be music, it could be making benches for the local schools, making bird boxes, bat boxes, all kinds of stuff. But to be honest, the most important tool in the shed is the kettle. It's where, you know, the guys come in, sit down, have the cup of tea and chat. Generally speaking, probably men that has retired, so it's something for them to get involved in after retirement, by and large.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, we are delighted to have you on Under Construction today. So let's get it done. And Maeve, we might go to you a little bit. Sorry, please excuse my ignorance, but can you take me through what Benchspace does?
So it actually was started by two lecturers in furniture making in Cork. And they recognised when their graduates left college, they were really, really ambitious. And they wanted to get started on a creative career, start their own business. And then all of a sudden, they don't have access to any of the equipment they had when they were in college.
Wow.
So it's not just, let's say, graduates, but it would be tradespeople who want to actually start their own business. So we have all of the equipment. So we have two workshops within the marina. We have all the marina commercial park, I should say. Yeah. I say like as if I'm sitting right
of
down
course,
in Cork.
No. And this is probably going to be a problem, Pat. You might want to sip out this one. This is rebel chat.
I'm just saying. I see one of my lines, something about Dublin coming up. So I'll step in then.
Go on, Maeve.
So we have two workshops. One is professional manufacturing wood workshop. So it has a thickness or planer, panel saws. And then the other one has digital manufacturing. So laser cutters, 3D printers, jewellery making equipment as well. And really, if somebody would want to come in and access the panel saw to do a kitchen or anything like that, they can actually, first of all, they have to go through an induction. So there's the safety barriers and then they just can work away and access the space. So it's membership. So people can pay by month to access the space. So they wouldn't have been able to afford that equipment. So we lower the barriers for creative people who want to actually start their own businesses.
Maeve, it's the essence of community, isn't it? It's exactly, we're going back to, you know, knowing someone down the road that has a piece of equipment that you didn't have and you borrow it. But now this is a one-stop shop for all that.
Yeah, it's a grassroots organisation. So really, the guys who started it, they identified a gap in the market that they would have rather not have been there and then put an infrastructure in around it. So it is a voluntary organisation. There's one full-time employee, which is myself. It's a voluntary board. So we do operate training as well. So we deliver woodwork classes, digital fabrication, let's say laser cutting classes and jewellery classes to cover our overheads and our revenue. But we train around 400 people a year to upskill in and introduce them into woodwork or any other kind of discipline as well.
So we heard about this through we have an affiliation with TU Dublin, and in fairness, we spoke to a couple of the apprentices there and they mentioned the Benchmark. So obviously there isn't one in Dublin at the moment, which is a shame. So what's the plans for expansion in relation to to bench base them?
We've always, like, we actually get asked that a lot, and it's taken traction in the last year since there's more awareness coming of bench space. So we've been asked, like, you know, would there be a bench space Mayo or a bench space Sligo? To be honest, we're still working on trying to get a sustainable business model. We operate on a lot of funding. Actually, today we just got announced that we were awarded funding through Rethink Ireland. So it's around 130,000 in order to help scale bench space, which is actually an absolute lifeline.
It's fantastic. Yeah.
So we are advocating nationally for local authorities or for more support for this type of an institution that can actually fill the gap in the market and retain graduates and attract people to kind of to live in Cork, because of course it's the best place in Ireland.
Swiftly moving on to my next question.
I would say that we need to get our business model right first before actually you start replicating or building out a network. And like, just leaning into Men's Sheds, like, they have amazing resources for people who want to set up men's sheds all around Ireland. And if that's the case, it's going to happen with bench space. We need to actually have the resources right first on the ground before you start duplicating it around Ireland.
So have you seen an increase in the use of the premises you have now?
We have, and actually we've a waiting list for the wood workshop. Our facility, like, we've outgrown the facilities that we have, and we're actually having difficulty trying to find suitable facilities within Cork, just with the lack of commercial and light industrial spaces available at affordable prices. So we have a waiting list for our wood workshop, and we certainly, with some of the, let's say, laser equipment, that's, we actually could buy another laser cutter and increase capacity on that. And with that, we have engineers using that, we have woodworkers using that. It's really diverse in terms of the amount of trade people using it.
Amazing and great to hear. And I'll go to you. Obviously, we know your role within Men's Sheds, but just for someone on the ground, you know what I mean, the people that use your sheds, what do they go there for?
I suppose, Donnacha, the sheds themselves kind of are unique, and they tend to reflect the various different kinds of characters that are in that shed. So every shed you go to kind of has a different vibe. For some, it is very much woodwork orientated or metalwork orientated. So the sheds tend to be those kind of connectors within community spaces. So they connect up with schools, they connect up with, say, Farroga clubs, other youth clubs, and the tidy towns in particular. So they end up doing a lot of work for those organisations. So for tidy towns, a lot of the kind of benches you'd see, a lot of the flower boxes you'd see generally come from the men's sheds. But not every shed would be involved in that. You know, some sheds are pretty much social spaces where, you know, guys come in, they sit down, they buy tree kettles and they eat the biscuits and they have the chat, you know. And so, yeah, you have a range of different kind of things going on. But the shed has been proven to be very instrumental for the health and well-being of men. And there's lots of research on this that's been carried out, particularly by Carlo and Waterford IT, through the professors down there. And look, the results are really astonishing, you know, the impact that it has positively on the man's mental health, general health and well-being, the family, the wider community. So sheds are super places, you know, and similar to Maeve's point, you know, the funding is always an issue as to where that comes from. And that has improved, I would say, over the last couple of years in particular, that it is a little easier now to get funding. But the problem for a lot of sheds is, first and foremost, if there's a need in the community and a couple of guys get together and they say, right, let's set up a shed, the next thing is, where is that going to be? Is it actually a shed? For some, it might start off as part of a porta cabin, you know. We've often seen a few places where, you know, guys go and they get a couple of containers, shipping containers, and they get an angle grinder and they put the two side by side and they just cut the two, a door from one into the other, and that can often be the start of a shed, you know. And we recently visited a shed up in Limavady, up in Derry, and it has started off like that, and now it's built up, a whole shed is built around that, you know what I mean? So there's for every kind of scenario that you can think of, there's a shed out there that would match that scenario, you know.
Maybe you'd find that quite similar in terms of the peer-to-peer learning, I'd say, is quite unique as well within bench space. People with certain skills, different skills, upskilling and helping others.
Yeah, so because there's such a diverse discipline, it's creating an environment for innovation to happen. And we would say people, it's for people to, what is it, make by themselves, but not make for themselves, not by themselves. So they're not isolated. And we would get, let's say, especially the furniture makers, the woodworkers, they would be like, across all our studios, so it's open plan modular studios, there's not tall walls dividing, so you can see across. And it's a case of bouncing design ideas off, or like, you know, materials, and then also sourcing materials as well. So as a, certainly that peer-to-peer learning.
Yeah, because it's an amazing thing. And and maybe wrong of me to say, but just from my experience in dressing rooms, I always found it was easier to chat to my teammate, like Pat is here, along his shoulder, as opposed to eyeballing him. And that's what you do when you're working on a project.
Yeah, and you know, the shed sort of slogan is shoulder to shoulder, you know. So when men come into that environment within the shed, so you're talking about the four walls and the roof, and that sort of corrugated iron sort of space, men talk about things that they never would talk about outside of that environment. So there's a kind of a magical kind of dust within the shed. If you could bottle it and sell it, it's so unique. It's very hard to pinpoint why that's the case. But what the research shows, particularly in Australia, is that when men come into that space, they talk about issues that they would not talk about to someone else if they're actually standing in front of them. But you throw a lawnmower engine up on a bench and four or five guys get surrounded, and 2 hours later, they're talking about mental health issues, prostate cancer, all these kind of things that they just wouldn't talk about. Probably wouldn't even talk to their doctor about them in many cases, you know. So you're right, there is something about that shoulder-to-shoulder type of approach where men feel much more comfortable, whatever kind of barriers are there, that tends to break it down. Why nobody can actually put their finger on it, except they know it works.
It's my wife, Jenny. She's there. If you want to have a good family gathering, just light a barbecue and straight away you'll see all me and my brothers straight over there having probably the greatest conversations we've had in some time. But Maeve, who's using bench space at the moment? What are the type of people who are using the brilliant facilities?
It would be many creative startups. So we would have, in terms of discipline-wise, we would have woodworkers ranging from soft furnishings to furniture makers. Then we'd have goldsmiths or jewellers, and we have some engineers in there as well using the space.
And diversity, Maeve, how's the diversity piece in relation to bench space, the usage between men and women, or is it all just...
I would say in the wood workshop, we do have one female woodworker. In terms of, let's say, our training courses, ever since I've started, I've made a point of using females, taking photographs of female woodworkers and then using that on our website. Initially, people thought bench space was just about wood, but we are multidisciplinary, and I make a point of using females as well as males in the photograph to try and break down that barrier. So in terms of people coming in, it's actually a complete mix. And we also deliver some programs that will be targeting people from disadvantaged or marginalised backgrounds as well.
And who's delivering those courses? And is you self-funding that as well?
The Community Foundation for Ireland to deliver, it was through the Cork Arts Fund, and was to deliver a program for people from marginalised backgrounds initially, yeah.
I could touch on the same thing in relation to the men's sheds, and I'm conscious of diversity again. I assume it's not all just men. Is it just the men's sheds, or have you seen the ladies want to come down and they want to get involved in certain elements?
Yeah, I mean, just what's happened over the last couple of years is that we have women's sheds starting to appear. And there's a couple of different terms. I think there's she sheds and women's sheds and so forth, sister sheds and that out there. And they got some funding as well this year from Minister Humphreys for their sustainability. So yeah, they're happening away in communities. I think there's about 40 women's sheds thereabouts. There's about 420 men's sheds in the Republic. There's another 50 in Northern Ireland that would be affiliated with us. There's probably another 40 sheds in Northern Ireland who'd be affiliated with the UK men's sheds, you know. So there's at this stage, there's a shed nearly in every parish, you know.
Amazing to hear about the funding, and so important. But Maeve, you might give us an example of a real life example, just someone that uses bench space and has, you know, been so key for them.
A success story for bench space is when someone moves out of it because they've grown so big. One of the other things we actually do is we have, it's called contract services, where we can work on big projects and bring in small local craft people to work on them. So we built, I think, around 11 parklets around Cork City, and we used local crafts people to work on it. And we got two blacksmiths in to do all the work. And as a result of us giving them that work, they were actually be able to get their own workshop, and it was a spin-off business from Bench Space. And then there's other, we've no other furniture makers that started in Bench Space, and now they actually have their own workshop and employ around three people in it. So it's, for us, when they have to leave, is a success story for us.
That must be incredibly rewarding to see someone come in actually needing a bit of help, but that's all they need, support, encouragement and a bit of direction.
Yeah, so it's lowering the barriers for people and contributing to the creative economy of Cork as well. And like those people, like we have someone who has, I don't blame them, they moved from Offaly down to Cork to access.
No, it got interesting. No end, didn't it?
Necessarily low blow there. Yeah.
Someone has to move to Cork.
Maeve is actually from Mayo, but yeah, more rebel than anyone I've ever come across.
They're only used to junior C hurling. So that was a real junior C hurling trophy.
Yeah. Northern Ireland than hurling. but she actually moved from Offaly to Cork in January because there wasn't a facility like it, and she would have been she's a goldsmith, a stone setter, but she wouldn't have been able to access anywhere else.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And the same question for you, just some of the personal stories, the reflections, not only for the person that uses the shed, but maybe the broader family and community that, you know, feel the effects of it.
Yeah, I mean, we had a national consultation just at the back end of last year with all the sheds around the country. And one of the things that you find remarkable is men coming up who maybe have retired, maybe they've had an illness, or maybe a loved one, a partner passes away. So men generally start thinking about the shed when there's a kind of a transitional piece in their life, you know. And you know, you have all kinds of scenarios where men come up and they'd put the hand on your shoulder and the tears would be running down their face, and they'd say, look, if it wasn't the shed, I wouldn't be here. You know, and they're not just once-off things. Yeah. They're everywhere you go. And lots of other scenarios where men stand up and they say, look, I lost my best friend to suicide. If he knew about the shed, I think he'd be sitting in that chair that's right beside me now that nobody's sitting in, you know. Uh-huh. And they're very powerful sort of stories. On real sort of personal levels, look, loads of men out there who maybe their wife passes away and the shed gives them that new kind of lease of life, because life changes then and you're looking for something else to come in that helps the person, both from a mental health point of view, but also from a physical health point of view. We have lots of walk-in shops attached to the sheds where guys just come down on Thursday morning and go off and walk for 5 or 10 Ks, you know, having the chat. So there's loads of those kind of personal stories out there, particularly throughout COVID. I would also say that in the sheds in Northern Ireland, one of the most amazing things you find is that cross-community piece where people come together from both sides of the community, and when they walk into the shed, they're next-door neighbours. What has happened in the past doesn't matter. And I would say, and a lot of people involved in community work in Northern Ireland would say, that the sheds in Northern Ireland is the most inclusive, equality, community kind of settings, where when people walk in through that door, their background is of no interest to anybody else in there, you know.
Yeah. Maeve, it's great to have examples like that. Have you any more examples of how Bench Space has helped change people's lives?
Sure. We have a woodworker who joined us last year, a completely fresh out of college, and he started his business, registered his business name within Bench Space, and started building towards, I'm not sure, have you ever heard of Showcase Ireland? It's the craft and design trade expo, you could say, that's organised by the Design and Craft Council, and it's held every year in RDS. And he built up his product line. He worked with the local enterprise office, who we work quite closely with as well, and they supported him. And he actually went and did his first Showcase Ireland event. He reached out to us afterwards and he said he wouldn't actually have been able to do that and make those steps along the way if it wasn't for someplace like Bench Space.
And the same question to you then.
Yeah, there's been loads of really important work that the shed does within the community and for individuals. And there's a shed which I won't name, but in there on any given day you will find five men who are probably ranging between 60 and 75. All of their wives have passed away. One of those guys is a chef. He used to work in a local hotel. And what they do is they get a jar and they put it on the middle of the table every day. And whatever monies people have, they throw it into that. So it could be €2.50. He gets that and he goes straight across the road to Lidl. So I'm probably giving away where the shed is now. And he comes back with pasta, minced meat, and he fires that into a pot. He was a previous chef. And about four or five guys come down from the local training network centre as well. And they come in there every day of the week. And this spaghetti bolognese, probably all put together for less than €10, feeding, I'd say, 10 guys, five of who I suspect would not get a meal, would not get their dinner every day of the week.
They're
widowers. They come for that. It's very hard to quantify the value of that in the community. Do you know what I mean? It's very hard to quantify it. But also for those young guys coming up from the local community network centre, you very often have scenarios where there maybe breakdown in families and so forth, and they come in there to get their dinner and to get meals. We have a shed up in Warren Point that won an award for the work it did through COVID. So basically, what it did through COVID was it went around to the local shops and had done the deliveries out to the houses, grew their own vegetables, and gave that out to older people living on their own who might not have Meals on Wheels in the area and might not be able to get their own sort of shopping. So almost in every shed throughout COVID, they were doing something for local community simply because there was no one else there to kind of do it. And the one thing about men is when you get four or five men together, there's nothing that they think they can't achieve. Whatever it is you fire on the table, very positive. Yeah, let's have a go at this, lads, and we'll see how we get on,
But Maeve, the ripple effect of that, not only for the person or someone then that benefits from, say, I'm just taking the example of the meal, but the wider family, to know that your family is okay because they're in this type of a setup.
Yeah, exactly. And I would say it's even for parents. My background, I actually went to art college, and when I graduated...
Don't tell me you went to art college in Cork.
It was Galway. It was Galway. I went to art college, and when I graduated, I did my work experience in Mayo Arts Office, and I recognised that there was a whole kind of industry behind actually supporting the creative sector through local authorities. And I realised, and that's actually this kind of the area in the creative sector I wanted to work in, the back end that would be setting foundations for people to actually be able to make creative things. An organisation like Bench Space is making it possible for people to have creative livelihoods. So when parents see their kids going to college, or if any even mature students want to go to, let's say, art college, my parents was very lucky. They were really supportive. My brother actually did art college as well, and he works in special effects model making. But when people go to art college, it's probably the same with the princess, they're like, what are they going to do? Yeah. What are they going to do? But actually having spaces like Bench Space makes it possible and lower barriers for people to actually try and have a creative livelihood initially. And there's much lower risk for them.
Mm. Maeve, can you chat to us about funding? Because it's the one that comes up, but maybe take us through the journey of it and areas that you would see that are probably gaps that you need help with.
Yeah, and it's funny, it was one of the first things, and we think me and Linda touched on 1 minute after meeting outside, was funding element. For us, it's to make sure that if any funding does come along, it's to make sure that we're aligned with it and not actually just creating something to try and align with it. So rather than deviating from what our business model is.
Okay.
So we would work, we look at everything through an enterprise lens. So it could be a visual artist, even though they mightn't see themselves as a business. At the end of the day, they're selling art, or sole traders. Everything's through an enterprise lens. So we got funding back in 2020 to Enterprise Ireland, through the Regional Enterprise Development Fund, which is called REDEF. I did well, didn't I?
Well done, you nailed it.
Not even taking a breath there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So my role is actually funded through them for 3 years, and the idea was to scale Bench Space. Bench Space is the first of its kind in Ireland. So that was a huge boost for us. So my role is to build that out. And since I've come on, I have brought in, I think, over 250,000 extra in funding, and that can be programmatic funding to deliver programs. Also, the Rethink Ireland grant that we just got awarded, that was through the Tomar Trust, that it will be for scaling, so that can go to operational, so actually staff as well. And then one other one would be the Connected Hubs. God, I'm ticking them all off. The Connected Hubs is through the Department of Community and Rural Development, I think. You get funding from them as well. And that was to build out the infrastructure on the hub. So we were able to
build sounds more like a GA club. Just a question to both of you then in relation to the funding piece. Like, there is an awful lot of work involved in raising funds, and I know that from all jokes aside, Lib GA, so you're trying to fund all the time, and most of them you're hitting the same people for the same. What can government or your local TDs or local, what can they do to make your lives a bit easier in relation to funding the piece of work that you guys both do?
Believe in us, I would say. To believe in our ambition. We are testing proof of concept right now. And we have been doing this since 2017. So for them to believe in us, we'd love to bring them to a successful model in England or in Europe that is operating and has potential to completely change an infrastructure of a city.
And Enda, you?
Yeah, I think for us, kind of, you have the sheds on the ground and then you have us as a national organisation. So there's kind of two different kind of funding things going on. I think one of the first things is just to say thanks to government and various departments to have funded us. Minister Humphreys recently made an overall fund of 800,000 available for sheds. And that's through the Department of Community and Rural Development. I think that's the other way around,
yeah.
Rural and community development, yeah. You know, they're very supportive and they put a lot of effort into understanding the needs of sheds. So what we're looking for is the continuation of that and to expand that out as much as we possibly can. Big issues for sheds on the ground is insurance, rent, overhead such as gas, ESB, general kind of heat and light. If they get those issues covered for the year, then the shed is pretty much safe. So it's to try and have that sustainability grant that comes in for the sheds. So the sheds are finding it and struggling at the moment to keep up with the overheads, because the overheads, unfortunately, are accelerating away faster than the income is, you know. So it's to try and keep that kind of thing matched. For the organisation ourselves, I think, again, it's like Maeve's situation. There's kind of multiple funding sort of streams going on. We do get some core funding from the Department of Health through the HSC, thanks to Fergal Fox and his team there. We also get funding from the Department through Healthy Ireland, and thanks to Tom James and his team there. The Healthy Ireland funding actually goes directly towards a programme that we have for men's health in the shed, and it's called Sheds for Life. And what's really amazing about it is that so one of our partners there is the Irish Heart Foundation, so they come along with the big red van and the men come flying to that, you know, and when they hear the big red van is coming, they'll come down, they get the blood pressure done, they get the bloods looked at, they get the diabetes checked, body mass index, all that sort of stuff that they wouldn't necessarily go to the doctor to do. But they all stand in a queue and they're having the chat and they're talking about the rugby match yesterday or the hurling match last night on the TV or whatever's happening. And before they know it, it's their turn and they're gone in. And it's you know, that sort of environment that really, really works. And this year, that programme ran up in the Northwest. And there was a case where a gentleman came in, the nurse done his blood pressure straight to A&E, straight to Dublin, and a pacemaker the following day. You know, and the year before we had someone who went in to speak with the nurse. She found a mould. He was gone straight to have it removed. So these kind of guys are, you know, to an extent, a lot of the men in the sheds, particularly in rural areas, there's a lot of isolation. They wouldn't necessarily go to the doctor. They wouldn't see a public health nurse. But when all the men gather together, they'll do these kind of things that they won't normally do. And it ends up in real practical results for people.
Fantastic.
Just in relation to a lot of the teams around our podcast, the apprenticeships is a huge piece because the industry is struggling, the construction sector, to get younger people involved in the sector, mostly due to, look, everybody wants a child to go to college, you know, they don't see a benefit in having a trade. I'm interested, both comments from yourself, Maeve, and in particular with you, when you see the calibre of tradesman and craftsman that's in the sheds that are retired, surely to God, there's something there that can be a collaboration between apprenticeships or a collaboration between, on a previous podcast, someone mentioned going and working for the summer on a building site. Surely there's something within that where people who are thinking about going into men and women, boys and girls thinking about getting into the sector, could team up with a men's shed somewhere and the men in there can show them, you know, a craft, what that looks like. Is there any being initiatives around that? And I'll come to you on the next question.
Yeah, so in Australia there has been, not in Ireland yet. I think we're probably a couple of years behind where they are at, but you can definitely see the different kind of trades and skills, and a lot of, you know, maybe trades that are dying or skills that are dying out, you know, like wheel making and the making of certain instruments and stuff like that, that you find happening in the sheds. Wood turning is huge. God, the amount of stuff that guys can turn out of wood is unbelievable, you know. And that seems to be a skill that's actually dropping off from what you would just hear, you know, speaking to the guys in the sheds, you know, that there isn't a level of wood turning skill out there now that there would have been in the past, you know.
Yeah. And maybe then from your perspective, is the people in your, the bench base are all obviously fully qualified, crafted people. Is there anything that apprentices, or if I'm a young guy or a young girl sitting down and listening to the podcast going, I wouldn't mind having a look at that and see what that looks like? Have you programs where you bring young people in, or is there that in the scope?
It's on our roadmap in introducing young people. So mainly it's for over 18s right now. But we are looking at, it's just red tape. It's looking at getting programs for parents and kids and also young people into the space. But we'd say our workshop doors are open. The concept of bench space is quite new, being the only one in Ireland. So we are open to giving tours and to sharing that story. So we encourage people to actually come down into space, and makers are all on site. And actually, one of the things we do, we deliver training to MTU Crawford. So we actually deliver training to their lecturers initially on the laser cutter. And then we deliver a module for them in contemporary making tools. So you're taking the students out of the college environment and bringing them into the workshop. So they're actually getting to see people who graduated from their college and actually seeing them working for themselves. So it completely changes the frame of reference for them and makes them actually see life after college, because a lot of them will be very insulated in college. And it's probably going back to my first point. And then once they leave college, they feel like they're on their own. But actually, when they come into bench space, they realize there is actually a community out there.
Well, Maeve, that's perfect full circle, really, isn't it? You know, like being taught something and then training it on in time.
Yeah, and it feeds into the whole circular economy as well, and keeping everything in Cork.
Yeah.
Sorry!
Maeve, even I have enough at this point. But just, look, I'm a fan of goal setting. If you were to look at both of your initiatives and within the community, where would you see it in the future? I'll go to you first end on it.
Yeah, I think it's about making sure that every man out there knows that he has the opportunity to join a shed and the impact that would have. And but get your head into a shed is the slogan that we use. That's a huge piece, you know, to get every man in the country to realise what the shed has to offer. Then on the other hand, it's about ensuring that we can get the funding as a national organisation to support the sheds, because out of the 420 odd sheds, there's probably in there 50 to 70 sheds that may not reopen after COVID, because some of the things that have happened is, you know, some of the leaders in those sheds, some of those sheds tend to be quite young. So some of the leaders in those sheds, for whatever reason, may not be in the position to give the kind of leadership and the time to the shed. So a real thing is to try and put in targeted interventions for those kind of sheds and to support the shed, because health and safety is a huge issue in sheds. Conflict can be as well from time to time. And if the organisation at national level has the resources to help the sheds be the best shed that they can be, that's really where our aim is, you know.
And for you, Maeve, the future?
Future, we see ourselves connecting in with complementing third level and further education, as well as connecting in with industry and manufacturers within the city and providing a pathway for people who want to start a creative business.
So if I'm a young person down in Cork, obviously, because I can't be from anywhere else, if that's the case for your place, how do I go about then getting I know you're saying your capacity is limited, but how do I go about starting, getting involved with Bench Space?
Just reaching out to us either on social media, Bench Space Cork, sending us an email or calling us, and just coming down and visiting the space.
And what's that involved in? If I do get a place, how does it work? So if I'm a carpenter, I want to make a kitchen next week.
So you'd have to complete a safety induction. So we compare it to driving lessons and driving tests. So if you have driving lessons elsewhere and you have used equipment, you need to come down and do our driving test to make sure that you can use the equipment safely. If you have no experience at all, you can either do one of our courses or go get training elsewhere and then come back and do our driving test. So once you complete the driving test, either you can drive by yourself or you need to have a passenger, so that'd be a supervisor, and then come in and use the space. So you either, it's actually one of the perks is 24/7 access. We actually had a tradesperson come to us last week and he isn't able to access, he works in a kitchen fitters and he isn't able to access the machinery in the space because production is so high at the moment. So he wants to go out on his own eventually. So he's coming to us before his work at 6 o'clock in the morning to use our equipment to get work done and then going to his full-time work.
So do you have to facilitate that 6 o'clock start then?
So it's 24/7 access. So people get their own set of keys on a certain, on a month membership. So it starts from 250 a month. And the wood workshop is 350 a month. So that's all inclusive. They get their own set of keys and they can come and go whenever they like. We're in an industrial estate. So sound wise is absolutely fine.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And the same then ended to you if I'm sitting at, when I'm Dunica's age. How do I get a start in men's sheds or what do I do?
Yeah, so it's really about seeing where your local shed is. So you can go onto our website, www.mensheds.ie, and in there there's a shed finder. So you just put in the county you're in and that'll throw up all the sheds that are in the county. If you're looking at setting up a new shed, then you contact us directly and we will go out and support the committee to set up that shed and go through all the processes. First thing is find the premises, get insurance. There's all that kind of thing. So it can be a bit of a nightmare in terms of trying to navigate the funding models that's available locally for sheds. That varies a little bit from council to council, from partnership area to partnership area. So what's available in Donegal, for example, could be completely available, completely different than what might be in Cork, for example. No doubt Cork would be much better, of course.
This episode might get bored.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
discriminating against
you
Cork people.
I'm feeling nauseous. Incredible. Guys, can I just say thank you so much. The essence of being Irish is community and looking out for each other. And your two fantastic initiatives are leaving, people around our country avail of unbelievable skills and really setting them up. You should be so, so proud. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks for having us
on. Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you.
As we do every episode, don't forget, we have a special guest on and we are delighted to be joined today by one of the brothers of Glennon Brothers, Mike Glennon, to join us and catch up. We had Mike on the last series of Under Construction. So, Mike, you're very welcome.
Delighted to be here.
Thanks very much for coming. Yeah, Mike, the last time you were on, we discussed a number of things. One, first of all, was Longford football. That hasn't changed, Mike. You're still in the same.
And just for the record, as a Cork friend of mine said, I'm afraid, Mike, you might have peaked too early this year. We did win the Auburn Cup, so we have silverware at the end of the year. The league hasn't been our most successful run of it. We're going to slip down to Division 4, but we're all geared up for the Tailteann Cup.
That's the job.
Mike, just on that, it is so important to support and get behind our own communities like you're doing there.
Yeah, in particular, I suppose, we're a third generation family business. Like the business was set up in Longford in 1913. Wow. So we're really deeply rooted in the business. Interesting enough, two brothers who went to America ended up meeting two sisters from Cork, marrying them and coming back to Longford on a holiday. Saw the business was for sale in the Longford Leader and they bought it in 1913.
Wow, what a story.
And interesting enough, what I covered the last day is the first few years, like all family businesses were really good, and then they reached a tough point in that they make the really difficult decision that one of the two brothers and their family had to go back to America because the business wasn't big enough to sustain both families.
Amazing.
So that was definitely the first major decision to be faced in Glennon Brothers in its history. That's the fate of business. Sometimes you have to make these difficult decisions.
And then last time you were in, we had an issue around forestry licences and the difficulty in the backlog. Can you give us a bit of insight on how that is today?
Yeah, I mean, we have moved from a felling licence crisis to an afforestation crisis. I mean, it's incredible to think that we're planting the lowest level of trees since 1949. This year we'll only plant 2,000 hectares versus a government target of 8,000 hectares versus a climate change target of 18,000 hectares. So we're really getting it terribly wrong. And Ireland is uniquely positioned. We can grow trees in Ireland twice as fast as Scandinavia. So we have an inherent advantage to forestry in Ireland. But we've destroyed it with bureaucracy and inaction by government and government departments. I mean, it's an incredible scenario that we have. On one hand, we hear a very strong message from government, and understandably so, about sustainability and climate change. And yet forestry holds the key to climate change and to provide wood for the much needed house building market. So here we have an opportunity that we're missing. And even recently, the situation is now that we didn't get our application through the EU protocol or EU approval. And now we don't have anything in place for this season. So now we're going to have worse planting season going on at the moment. And this is putting inordinate pressure on the nurseries, on the guys who are planting trees. So we have moved from a felling license crisis to an afforestation crisis. And yet we were never positioned better to take advantage of something, because ultimately timber provides the best solution to climate change.
That's a real worry, isn't it? From someone not exposed to this industry at all, to hear how good we are at something and we're not taking advantage of, you know,
our natural assets.
We're holding the aces.
Yeah, I mean, we hold the aces. I mean, our climate and soil type means we can grow trees twice as fast as Scandinavia. That's surely to God a massive advantage. And we have the demand for houses. I mean, so you know yourself, they're talking about 35,000 houses per annum. That was pre the war in Ukraine. So the demand for housing is phenomenal. And the right solution from a climate change perspective is to build Irish homes with Irish wood. So, I mean, the great thing about forestry, as you know, trees take in the carbon from the air and they store it into their trunks and branches. So forestry is the sink of carbon. Then when you use wood in construction, you're locking up that carbon. You know, an interesting thing is 50 lengths of 16x4x2 holds 900 kilograms of carbon. So if you use that in your house for your studs or partitions, you're locking up the carbon. And then the other point is by using timber instead of other products that are harder on the environment. So it's the three S's for forestry, is to sink, to store and to substitute. And it's going to be very much on the agenda going forward. I mean, I think the sustainability issue and climate action issue got naturally sidelined because of COVID, but it's going to come back in a big, big way. And as I say, forestry definitely holds the key.
So what do we tell politicians if we're
I think there's two things that you tell them. First of all, is that if we are serious about climate change, then we have to plant more trees. If we are serious about climate change, we have to use more wood in the built environment. They're the two simple messages. And the third one is, if you don't make the planning application process for afforestation simple, then farmers won't do it. You need to make it very simple, not complex, so they can embrace forestry and allow guys to convert land that's marginal in towards forestry. That's the key message.
You've had a few changes in the business recently. You've made an acquisition. Do you want to give us a feedback of that?
The Balkas acquisition, Balkas was established in Enniskillen in 1962. It's composed of two parts of it. It is a sawmill that produces timber for the construction industry, agricultural industry, fencing industry, and it also has an energy piece. So in Enniskillen and also in Invergordon, they have a combined heat and power plant. So that means they use wood residues or forest products, renewable residues, to generate electricity. And they also generate wood pellets that are available in some of your branches, Pat. So they're the wood pellets that you use in stoves. There also is a bigger part of that. Some of the people that they supply the wood pellets to are hospitals, care homes, and there's three or four distilleries in Scotland that they supply the heat to as a result of the wood pellets. So the interesting development of that, and we ourselves have got involved in a combined heat and power plant in Troon. So now today, Glennon Brothers as a business generates more electricity than it consumes. And all that energy and electricity generation is all from forest products. So it's all clean, green energy. It's classic sustainability in action. So you're taking a crop of forests you're making the best value you can out of them. You're getting the larger size for the construction industry. The wood residues, the sawdust, the bark, the pulp from the tops of the trees, they're all being used to generate electricity. And all the product has been used, so there's no waste in it.
So what other challenges do you have in the business then in relation to, because you know the construction sector, we're struggling with labour, we're struggling with the cost of materials. Yeah. What challenges are in the forestry end and the timber manufacturing?
So we'd have got a big belt with the hike in energy costs. So if you take our plant in Fermoy, on an annual basis, and we used to do a good job on electricity procurement, you know, the energy was costing us around $1.2 million per annum. During the COVID period, that shot up to $5 million per annum. So there are massive changes. So we are a heavy user. And while I'm saying on one hand, we generate more electricity than we use, and we do, but they're not all in the same site. So the site in Fermoy is taking electricity from the grid more than any other manufacturer is. So for us, the challenge is, I suppose, holding on to people. Ultimately, it's a huge challenge. We as a sector need to do more to promote the contribution of the sector to the economy and the growth and potential of it. We've been poor at maybe telling the positive story, the green story, the green tech story. We haven't capitalised on that. So people is a challenge. The market, you know, we've gone through a period of you know, phenomenal movement in pricing, as you will know. And I was just looking back at it this morning before I came in here today. So from January 18 to April 22, timber prices went up 71%. Then from September 21 to April 23, they come down 29%. So in the period of January 18 to where we are today, prices have gone up 30%. But the issue has been, if it went from January 18 to April 23, 30%, that is an increase. But the issue for us has been, and for your customers and for you, is it hasn't been a gradual line. It's been up and down at phenomenal issues, a result of COVID, pre-Brexit, war in Ukraine. All of those drivers have become issues.
And you mentioned employment. Then for younger people who listen to the show, we've had one of the teams around the podcast is apprenticeships.
Yeah.
What sort of careers are available within the forestry and within your own sector?
I mean, there's phenomenal careers in forestry. I mean, forestry itself is a huge area. I mean, you know, there's a huge area in forestry. Also, in the level of technology, when people come around our plant, they're amazed at the level of technology and scanning and automation, some area in robotics. So it actually is an area for if you have an engineering mindset or a technological mindset, there's phenomenal opportunities in the timber processing sector, not just alone at Lennon Brothers, I mean, in the entire sector itself. I mean, it is interesting to know that the sawmills combined, I think if you take their and their supply chain, there's around 2,500 people in it. And if you take the forestry sector itself, which contributes 2.3 billion to the economy, there's 12,000 people employed. So we probably haven't done a good job of telling that. We two or three years ago, we've come together with Forest Industries Ireland. They're now the representative body of the chain. They're a division within IBEC. They're now getting out with the messages to support the sector. But the problem has been is we've been that busy in firefighting mode. We're firefighting about the felling license crisis. We're now highlighting the afforestation license crisis. So we've been dealing with crises rather than, I suppose, strategically positioning the benefits of the sector, the careers of the sector, and that's something we have to focus on more.
It's nearly an Irish problem, though. We don't like saying how good we are at certain things.
Yeah,
you know?
And there is that fine thing in the Irish psyche, is, you know what I mean? You know, you don't want someone to say you're running away with yourself or you lost the run of yourself. So you have to be. But in the complex world that we live in today, if we don't, you know this better than I do, Donica, but if we don't get your message across, then you're not at the table. And we have to get our sector's message across better.
And it's an incredible story. Yeah. Like even your own story there, the history, the tradition, the amount of people employed.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it is a really good story. And I mean, the core assets of Lennon Brothers have been our customer base. I mean, we have a really strong and loyal customer base. A fine example of that is Chadwicks, that have worked through us up and down through the highs and lows of the construction industry. You know, we've always worked with Chadwicks and they've been a huge supporter of Lennon Brothers. And the other core assets are a team of people. We have a phenomenal team of people in the business that, you know, they're typical of sort of Glenarbuzz is a typical family business. It's kind of flat structured, common sense, no nonsense, crap, you know, just the way you go with it. And we have a really, really good team of people. I mean, you know, we've guys in the business, you know, 40 years, we've guys in the business 30 years. Like, it's probably a poor reflection on us, but we really only celebrate when someone has 30 years in the business. The rest nearly doesn't matter.
I mean,
and in Longford, like the last time we were down in the Longford Arms, there was four people who had 30 years experience, and there was two with 35, and one of the fellas over 40. And that's just, you know, it's a phenomenal part of the story.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah.
So the future then, what are you thinking? Where do you see us in 5 years' time?
I definitely think we're going to see a greater use of wood in construction. I think it's going to be the game changer. Interesting enough, if you look at in France, so we don't have a culture of timber here. We have culture of different products. We don't have a culture of timber compared to our European counterparts. If you take even simple things like currently there's a height restriction from a combustible perspective that we can only go 4 stories in Ireland. In other countries, there's 24 stories with CLT or engineered wood products. So I believe that's going to move. I think there's going to be more pressure put on this built environment, that 37% representing the greenhouse gas emissions. That's going to put pressure on the entire sector for us all to rethink about how we process, how we do, and how we find greener solutions for the built environment. That's for sure. You're going to see much more use of wood. You know, if you take in France, for example, they have brought in a situation now in the government procuring process for buildings, 50% of them have to use wood. So that becomes legislation, that becomes the backdrop. And we have become slow to do that. But that's not the biggest issue in Ireland at the moment. The biggest issue in Ireland is we're not planting enough trees. So I do think there's going to be more timber use in construction.
And for Glenn and Brothers?
How we've grown. I mean, we've grown by trying to make good, intelligent investment decisions in the right equipment to make sure we can get the right unit cost of production, the right level of customer service, and that we keep ourselves ahead of the curve of technology. And the growth has always been coupled with really good acquisitions. And we've made a number of really, really good ones. And, you know, Balcast is a really good example of them. We made two in Scotland that are really significant for us as a business. And it does allow us to position ourselves both in Ireland and the small island and the big island as being, you know, the one shop stop solution for sawn softwoods.
Very good. Mike, listen, thanks very much for coming in again. Very much appreciate it. Donegal?
Yeah, continued success. It's an incredible story.
Thank you guys for listening to me.
The Under Construction podcast is produced by the Podcast Studios for Chadwicks, Ireland's leading building merchant company, where you can choose from the best products and expert advice to get the job done. Drop into any of your local Chadwick stores nationwide or visit us online at chadwicks.ie.